Blog Talk Radio.
Each day do you wake up and get out of bed? You got all these feelings rushing round in your head. You got that bout with doubt and neighbors singing the blues. Pick up the paper and it's all bad news. But you know in the end, happiness is your best friend. You can be what you wanna be. Hold down a step high and live like you're free. I said color, color your life happy. Color, every day you can choose. Color, color your life happy. If you choose happy, there's no way you can lose.
The difference between try and triumph is a little funky. We all have ups and downs, but you can still be happy. If you're gonna step, you might as well step high.
If you choose happy, there's no way you can lose.
ColorYourLifeHappy.com. Get your happy on.
Welcome to Color Your Life Happy for Monday, July 20th. I'm your host, Flora Brown, coming to you live from Anaheim, California, as I do every Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Our show today will inform, inspire, and encourage you. In a moment, we'll begin our episode today called Color Your Life Happy. Some days are going to suck. But first, I want to welcome all of you, my listeners, because I'm so honored that you made space in your schedule to join us. I encourage you to participate by asking questions or adding comments. If you're on the phone lines, all you need to do is press the 1 to let me know you have a question or a comment, and then you can get on the air. If you're on the web chat, just type in your questions or comments, and I'll be able to see them, and then I can read them on the air and answer them there. Let me remind you, too, that the show is live, so that means anything can happen. Lost signals is the most common thing that happens, and it happens to me sometimes, too, even as the host. If that happens, just call in again. Dial the same number you called in the first place, 347-539-5700. And don't worry about missing anything because all the shows are recorded and available for you later under on-demand episodes on my show page. I am Flora Brown again. I'm an author, coach, inspirational speaker, and consultant. I'm also a mom of 4 and a grandma of 3. I recently retired after 40 years of teaching junior high through university levels, the last 20 of which I taught critical thinking. If you haven't already done so, I invite you to visit my website, ColorYourLifeHappy.com, where you can now invest in my book, Color Your Life Happy, for a special pre-release price. It is full of stories, tips, activities. They will all speak to your inner desire to get the life you want and deserve. Now, on this show, the radio show, Color Your Life Happy, we talk about ways to create the lasting happiness you deserve in all areas of your life. And each week I usually interview guests from fields such as self-help, spiritual journeys, relationships, change in adversity, parenting, and so on. But today I'm going to get on my own soapbox, and I'm going to talk about one of my favorite topics, some days are going to suck, and what to do about them, of course. Now, I invite you to chime in and straighten me out if you think I'm on the wrong track, or call in and give us your story or your take on what I have to share. Have you ever seen a child having a tantrum in a grocery store? You know what I mean. They fall out on the floor kicking, legs frantically going, screaming to the top of his lungs. This child's reaction is a dramatic play for attention, in the hope that they'll get what they want. And this is often how children react when they're having a day that sucks. They may have spied candy and the mom is refusing to buy it, or they may just be tired and want to go home. Now, when I'm tired at the end of the day, I used to see this happen in the grocery store, and I'm going to tell you, I used to want to join that child on the floor, kicking and screaming. But there are two reasons that I never did it. Number one, The store manager would probably call 911 and have me escorted to a mental ward for observation. And number two, as an adult, I've learned that when I finished kicking and screaming, the problem that started it all is still there, or it's worse, and it certainly hasn't been handled. Let me tell you about a day when I discovered what to do about a day that sucks. We were on a very tight budget when I returned to graduate school years ago. We were making a big financial sacrifice because in order to accept a grant, I had to quit my full-time teaching job to become a full-time graduate student. I had just gotten a raise, by the way, on my teaching position, so I gave up not only a salary but a raise. Fortunately, we were able to still pay our mortgage and keep our three children. At the time, I just had three, now I have four. We were able to keep them healthy and fed on my husband's salary, but many other things had to just wait in line for their turn because, of course, we had made bills based on two salaries. I was driving an old car at the time that I wasn't sure would even start each time I got in it. Maybe some of you can relate to that. One morning, I was scheduled to give surveys to teachers at an inner-city junior high school, and it started pouring down raining. I put on my leather boots, I darted between the raindrops, and I jumped in the car. It started. Great. When I arrived at the school, I stuffed the stack of papers that I had under my raincoat to keep them dry. I grabbed my purse and the equipment I needed for the testing I was going to do, and I rushed into the building. Just before I reached the door, I stepped into a puddle of water, and when I pulled my dripping foot out of that water, the heel of my right boot was broken off. Now, in order not to be late for my appointment, I limped down the hall with my broken heel in my hand and made it to the meeting place on time. So here I was with damp clothes, a broken shoe, and a dampened spirit, but I still had to proceed as professionally as possible. Now, boy, that day really sucked big time. Now, I share this story because sometimes in the process of promoting positive thinking, like I've been doing, encouraging inner joy and sharing tips for happiness, people get the wrong impression. They typically think that there is some way to master the art of creating perfect days. But there is no art to that because some days are just going to suck. One day your head will be the perfect landing for bird droppings. Another day you'll lose your keys. Misplace your keys, or lose, which is even worse, your child will lie to you one day. Someone else will lie about you one day, and so on and on and on. All these things will happen. Being happy and claiming your inner joy is not about preventing these bad things from happening because we absolutely have no control over the weather or what others do. We just have control over how we react to these things. Now, how do we get past these sucky days then? Well, first, you have to recognize that these things that happen are events. They're not the sum total of your being. They're not you. They're things that are happening outside of you. So first, you've realized that. And second, you have to take away their power to control you by taking charge of your own reaction to these events. Now, I know this is not always easy depending on the situation. But you've probably discovered that having a spaz attack, as my kids call it, doesn't solve the problem typically, and you still have to do something after you've recovered from your spaz attack. So here are five things I did in the past and that you can do too. One of them is to be grateful for what does go right in a given situation. And using the story I just shared with you about my car and my broken heel and so forth, my car did get me to my appointment, so that was one good thing. And even more important, it got me home. The second thing is choose how you react. Now, I eventually laughed at my rainy day adventure. I wasn't laughing when it happened, but I did pull myself together to go on with the professional work I was there to do because, after all, this was part of my research that I had to complete in order to get my degree. The third thing, cry if you want to. I know that you were raised, probably like me, to believe that big girls don't cry, big boys don't cry. Forget that. Tears are nature's way of cleansing you. So if you feel like crying, just cry. Next, you need to seek solutions to whatever the problem is, because that's going to get you past the situation. And, of course, when you find the solution, take action. Finally, make note of what you've learned. If you didn't learn anything from this experience, then the next time something similar happens, you'll be back at square one. What did I learn from that day? One thing I learned was don't wear leather boots in the drenching rain. And they were cheap boots, too. A number of decades have passed since this event. Now, wouldn't it be a shame if I had let this singular event steal my joy and color my life sad? Some people kind of accumulate and let these events gain interest, like a bank account, and they just turn these things over and over, and not only does it make that day suck, it begins to make their lives suck. What bad days have you survived by taking control of your reactions? If you want to share some of that, please call in and share your story. John Rogers and Peter McWilliams said, "You can change anything you want, but you can't change everything you want." There's another old saying that nothing is certain in life but death and taxes. I want to add one more certainty to this, and that is change. A room gets dirty and full of cobwebs even if no one lives in it. You ever notice that? Remember the spooky houses you see in movies? You step into a room that hasn't been inhabited for a long time. There are cobwebs everywhere. Nobody's been there. Likewise, changes will inevitably occur in your life, even if you sit still and do nothing. As a matter of fact, if you sit still and do nothing, the cobwebs will be all over you. Now, what are some of these major changes that are going to take place in your life and mine? During your life, you are apt to fall in love with someone who doesn't love you back. That's happened to me, maybe to you too. You're going to get cheated by someone you trusted. You're probably going to get rejected in an interview. You're probably going to lose a contest somewhere along the line, get stranded in a strange place, fall and scrape your knee, even as an adult, encounter unfriendly strangers, or be called vulgar names. You're going to watch someone you love die. You're going to fail a test, and you're going to see all these things happen to your children. Now, these events are inevitable and definite sources of stress. When these things happen to us, that whole day just seems to suck. Now, even good change can be stressful. It has been shown that preparing for weddings or major events can be equally as hard on us as reacting to sad events. Now, here's an example from my own experience of how something that was good on the surface turned out to be very stressful for me. We moved from Los Angeles County to Orange County, and I was very excited about it because I had long looked forward to living in a bigger house in a safer neighborhood and surrounded by my favorite stores and conveniences. I also wanted to be able to finally send my children to the neighborhood schools rather than sending or driving them halfway across town to get to what I consider good schools. And I wanted to be near well-kept grocery stores, near all of my favorite services, post office, and so forth. So I was very thrilled when I moved. And the best thing of all is it put me only 10 miles from work compared with 34 miles. So I was exhilarated when I moved. And yet 6 months after I moved, I experienced a panic attack. I was driving home from church one evening when suddenly I started to feel dizzy. It was hot in the car, and I began to feel like I was shrinking, so I thought I was fainting. And fearing that I was going to lose control of the car, get in an accident, and so forth, I pulled over, and I took the next exit off the freeway. Now, I had only been in Orange County a few months, so I didn't know the street route home. All I knew was the freeway route. And this was in the days before GPSs were common. Well, I certainly didn't have one. And I pulled into the nearest gas station and asked the attendant to tell me how to get to my area by a street route. He didn't understand my question, and so he told me how to get back to the same freeway I had just exited. I was very frustrated. I pulled out of the station and pulled over in the dark next to the nearest curb, and I just cried. I felt so foolish because I knew that I was not too far from home, but I just did not know how to get there by the street route. And I was not up to investigating and experimenting at that point. I just wanted to be home. What made it even worse is that there was a friend at my house waiting for me to get here, and he would have gladly come and helped me get home, but I was too proud and decided I was going to figure this thing out. So after a few minutes of quieting my nerves, I managed to get back on the freeway, and I did so by reassuring myself that as soon as I recognized an exit, I could take that exit and finish my trip home. So I very cautiously returned to the freeway and stayed in the right-hand lane, looking anxiously up at those upcoming exits. Just two exits away, I saw one I recognized, and I exited the freeway and drove the street route home, trying to understand what had just happened to me. Now, I was just a few exits away from being at home, it seems, but when you have a panic attack, none of that matters. Any of you who perhaps had one probably felt confused about what happened, what brought it on, what to do about it. I was no different. I tried to explain my experience to a doctor. I went to a doctor, but I was not very successful in explaining it. The doctor just prescribed some pills to me that really were designed to treat vertigo. And what do you suppose the pills say on there? They say don't take these, or take these cautiously because they may make you dizzy. Well, duh, I was already experiencing problems with that, and I was not going to take those pills. I decided I just gave up on a medical solution and decided to use the spiritual principles I have been learning all my life. So I prayed, I meditated, and I avoided the freeways for more than a year. I also researched online to discover the nature of my anxiety and to try to find ways to handle it. Now, the fear of losing control is very terrifying, especially when you're driving. Now, driving didn't cause my anxiety, but it was tied to driving because it occurred when I was driving. Psychologists call this, I believe, situational anxiety, and that is when you're doing something, whatever you're doing at the time that you have an anxiety or a panic attack, you often tie that attack to that event. So that's what made me very fearful of driving. Now, when you live in Southern California, having driving anxiety is the last thing you want to have because it's a major inconvenience. Everything is spread out. I still had to drive to work and events. So while I was combating my driving anxiety, what I did was take elaborate steps to avoid the freeway. And sometimes if I had to drive 40, 50 miles away, I would even stay in hotels overnight to avoid driving at night because I felt that I could handle things better in the daytime. Now, eventually, I worked myself out of this driving anxiety, but years later, it returned. Now, why did this happen? Well, I did my own diagnosis and decided that I had been overloaded and overwhelmed. Now, the first episode took place right after I'd moved, and we not only had to relocate ourselves, but the kids had to start new schools, I had to learn new stores, doctors, and every service related to daily living. I was a single mother by then, or a widow. So planning and executing everything fell on my shoulders. None of it felt oppressive, but I had piled on too much. I had just become overwhelmed. Now, the second episode of panic occurred the day before I was to travel to Europe for the first time. I was going there to join my daughter for vacation. I scheduled my trip to occur within a few days after her last day of school and my last day of school. I finished grading finals, I submitted grades, I did my final packing. I was running last-minute errands and just getting everything ready as I was headed to my last errand, which was supposed to be going to the beauty shop, I started to feel lightheaded and dizzy again, and this fear of the previous driving anxiety came back over me. So I called my hairstylist, canceled my appointment, and went to the doctor instead. This doctor gave me all kinds of extensive testing. She could not find a physical reason for my attack. So, since she couldn't find any apparent physical problems, fortunately, she gave me clearance to proceed with my vacation plans, because had she found something, I'm sure she would have recommended that I not go. Now, I was relieved that during my vacation, I didn't have to drive. I didn't rent a car. I was just the passenger on buses, trains, and those things didn't bother me. It was just the driving that was very scary. When I returned from my vacation, I vowed to find a way to deal with these attacks before the onset of another one. So through my research, I learned about a program called Emotional Freedom Techniques. Now, I'm not on their payroll, and I don't get a commission or anything, but I just like to share this with people so they know about this technique. You can learn about it online, Emotional Freedom Technique. Before I go into that, I want to see if there are any questions or comments from anyone. I see I have a guest on in the chat room, and also have a guest online. So if either of you has a question at this point, please go ahead and raise your hand. On the telephone, you just hit the 1. And in the chat room, you just type in your question or comment. Okay, so what is Emotional Freedom Techniques? Well, Gary Craig is the founder of this technique, and he readily admits that he's not a licensed therapist or a psychologist. In fact, he's a Stanford engineering graduate, but he's also an ordained minister with the Universal Church of God in Southern California. Now, I have a strong belief in God and his power, but I was drawn to this method because it is not tied to any particular religious belief. In fact, he based this on a combination of the theories of mind-body medicine and acupuncture. Now, in this EFT, there are no needles or medicine involved. It really reports to work well with many physical and other conditions. And it just involves tapping what are called meridian points on your forehead, face, and so forth, and while repeating an affirmation. You can go online and learn about it. As a matter of fact, on YouTube, you can go there and you'll actually see the demonstrations of how to do it, because many people use it and have posted their videos online. Now, you may be skeptical, as I was, that something so simple as tapping these meridian points would have any kind of lasting effect. But I have found it to be very successful for me, and many people have used it to rid themselves of all kinds of anxiety and conditions. And you can read there on the website about why this works. Okay, so we've talked about 5 ways to deal with days and incidents that suck. One of them I mentioned was to be grateful for what goes right. Whatever the situation, there's probably some little part of it that went right. Number 2, choose how you're going to react. Number 3, cry if you want to. The tears are going to be helpful to you. 4, seek a solution. For me, the internet's a great place to begin. Can help you find people who even have the same problem you have. And they're probably discussing it in a forum or a blog somewhere online. Number 5, make note of what you learned. Whatever you have gone through, there's a lesson in it. And you know what they say, if you don't get the lesson, you're going to have to repeat it. Chances are there's some things you're going to repeat whether you got the lesson or not. So the lesson helps you to be better ready to deal with the next go-round. Now, there are many other ways to deal with days and incidents that suck. So let's talk about some of those. What about handling anger? Because that's one of the things that many people do in response to any upset, any incidents. At some point, personal or world events are going to cause us stress, and that may lead to anger. So what do you do about it? Well, there was a research study done on anger at UCLA, and the students showed that increasing anger increases your blood pressure. Now, this is no surprise. In spite of this, the researchers found that people who respond to stressful situations with short-term anger or indignation have a sense of control and optimism that's lacking in those who respond with fear. So when you're in a situation that's stressful, if you take control of it and have an optimistic attitude towards solving the situation, you're going to do better than those who don't. Now, this study failed to give suggestions on how to handle short-term anger, but I want to share some that have worked for me. One thing that has worked for me is to agree to be angry for a limited time. My office mate and I used to share very close quarters in an office we had, and we agreed many years ago when we first began working together that we made a rule, only one of us could be pissed at a time. So whoever stomped into the office upset first got to vent for that day, and the other person had to hold off on whatever was troubling them. And, of course, you can imagine what happened. By the next day, we didn't remember what we had been upset about the previous day. And we laughed at it because it worked for our entire careers together. So if one of us came stomping in, but it wasn't that person's day to be angry, they had to just hold off and listen to the other person vent. A second thing that has really worked for me is to send a letter to the offending party. Now, this is not going to work if someone just ran into your car. But if something has occurred in the city, in the nation, any incident or news story sometimes, I found that for me, I get a lot of relief from sending a letter to the editor, the college president, whoever needs to hear my take on the subject. And sometimes the letter isn't about telling them what I think they should do about it. It may just be to express and voice my upset and concern about the problem. A third thing you can do, of course, is to express your anger as calmly as possible to the upsetting party. Now, for some reason, people tend to hesitate to do this. They love to tell someone else about how they got upset, but they tend to not confront directly the person that did the original upsetting. That is very counterproductive because the person who did the upsetting now doesn't know how you feel, and you've given them free rein to do the same thing again. I had an experience when I returned from maternity leave to my university teaching position. I learned from my substitute that one of my colleagues had been snooping around my classroom and harassing my substitute to find out what grades and assignments my students had received. Now, this snooping teacher could have easily talked to me, called me, or whatever, but she was convinced that if some of the students that she and I both shared were passing my class and failing hers, then I must be doing something wrong. Now, her behavior was particularly upsetting to me because I'm known for being very accessible and very open to colleagues and students. And besides, I'd been on the faculty at that point for 2 years before this event occurred, so why did she wait until I was on leave? She could have called me. We all have each other's phone numbers, email, and so forth. Why didn't she approach me directly to discuss our classes? Well, when I found out about it, I could not relax until I had a conversation with this teacher. Now, it started off very calmly, but I'm afraid it did escalate to a higher volume than I had planned because her excuses were more pathetic than her original behavior. But the important thing is that I brought it out in the open. I let her know how I felt. I didn't need to waste any brain cells nursing the hurt, regretting, or the worst thing I could have done would have been to talk about her behind her back and still not have solved the problem directly with her. The fourth thing you want to do is pick your battles. Sometimes we have days that suck because we just try to fight everything. When I notice someone trying to rush past me in the grocery store, for example, or cut me off in traffic, I just let them go first. I've discovered long ago that decathlons are not held in grocery stores nor on the freeway during rush hour. So what is the point of running some imaginary race and risking your life? So pick your battles. Which things are you going to respond to? Which things are you going to do something about or just let pass? Number five, don't take yourself too seriously. If you can, try to find humor in the situation. Now, I know this is not easy in all situations, but if you can find humor in it and laugh at yourself, then you can get over it faster. Once in an effort to diffuse an argument among our children, my husband, who was normally very calm, he shouted in exasperation, "Control your temper!" The irony of the situation was so funny that we all broke out in laughter, and we still laugh about that, even though it's decades later. For all our efforts at maintaining happiness, anger is going to occur. It's part of the human response, and like fear, it has its place in our repertoire of feelings. Rather than be caught off guard, however, or react in a destructive or non-productive way, we need to discover what responses to anger work best. Now, if you make exercise and relaxation part of your daily routine or you learn to quieten yourself, you're going to help yourself be better ready for angry situations or encounters when they come up. You definitely don't want, however, to suppress your anger or to leave your anger unexpressed. Either of these are going to cause long-lasting physical and psychological damage. People who never allow themselves to feel or express anger are ticking bombs. They're bound to blow up, usually over something unrelated to the original anger-producing event. And when that happens, we typically hear about it on the news because they blow up in very big and dramatic ways. And I'm sure you can think of some of those events. If you realize that you get angry frequently or if you feel that the world is against you, then it's time to seek professional help with anger management. Anger management is not just the title of a movie. It's a real thing that you'll need to do for yourself if you need that. And you and your loved ones and your friends will thank you. Now, I have a news flash for you. Adversity touches us all. Nobody gets left out. I can remember one time I said to one of my friends, "Why me?" when something happened. And she responded, "Why not you?" And it's true. Adversity touches us all. No one gets left out. There's no exception made. And yet we're caught off guard so many times. Even though we know that death is inevitable, for example, we're seldom prepared when it strikes our loved ones. Losing a loved one through death or divorce is an ending, but it's also a beginning. When my mother died at age 92, I was grief-stricken to see her earthly life end. I was also happy to see her free of the pain and suffering that she had been going through. And her death was now the beginning of my turn as the oldest living member of our nuclear family. When the adversity is the loss of a job, savings, a home, the hurt is very painful, but again, it's the end and a beginning at the same time. Many victims of the widely publicized disasters like Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans felt helpless and abandoned, and some of them decided that life is unfair, and they were very upset about it to the point of committing sometimes violence. The truth is, however, that life is neutral. No one is immune from adversity. It's the cost of living life. As Jesus said in Matthew 5:45, the rain falls on the just and the unjust alike. Sometimes, though, before adversity strikes, our intuition tries to warn us of impending danger. Has that ever happened to you? if we pay attention to what some people call hunches, we can avert a bad situation. Here's an example of something that happened to me not too long ago. Several friends and I had a reunion. We had met in Italy, and we decided to have a reunion at the end of a year that had passed. So we met in California for our reunion at a hotel for a weekend. One night we went out to dinner, and as we were returning from dinner, I was the driver of the car that night. We were searching for a parking space. The hotel that we were staying in had this exorbitant parking fee for parking in the garage. So we decided we're not paying that fee. We'll find a street spot. Well, the block where the hotel was located was all taken. All the spots were taken. So I drove down to the next block, and I thought, oh, we can walk to the hotel from here. But as I was maneuvering the car to parallel park, four young men appeared from around the corner, and they were walking down the sidewalk toward us. One of them had his hand down in his pants, sort of with his four fingers down in his pants and his thumb hanging over the edge. At the same time this was going on, a car with its interior lights on was slowly going down the street, and the driver kept glancing over at these four young men who were walking toward us. Just as I was about to straighten the car up, a red flag went off and told me we were in danger. "Don't open the car," I said to the ladies. I got out of that space with my car and zoomed down the street and told them, "We are going to pay to park tonight." Now, they didn't recognize what was going on, but I felt my street smarts and my intuition come into play, and I have no doubt that we were about to be robbed or worse. You must listen to your intuition. You must pay attention to the red flags because they're trying to tell you something. Now, when adversity strikes, you can do several things. You need to, of course, try to keep your cool to the extent you can. Evaluate the situation. Decide on a positive and a healthy action to take. Definitely, you want to avoid wallowing in self-pity or playing the victim. Now, there are some people that get a lot of pleasure out of playing the victim, playing woe is me. Do you know some of those people? They always have sad stories. Whenever you talk to them, they always have these dramatic stories to tell you about whatever has happened to them. People like that, I think I need to stay away from that person because they tend to always be involved in or attract some severe things that happen to them. So playing a victim is very dangerous because it can become a habit and you can start to feel rewarded for it. It's not a good thing. Focus on what you have, not what you lost. That happened recently. There were fires near us, and some of the families who were involved in these fires lost their entire homes. The homes burned to the ground, and they were not able to get their things out in time, just themselves. One couple was standing outside of their home, and they were very happy, they said, to the reporter, because even though they were standing there looking at the ashes of all of their possessions and things that perhaps they had treasured, things, of course, that they would never be able to replace, they decided that they were very blessed because they still had each other. So when you lose something, it's very good to focus on what you have, not what you've lost, because everything that we have, we are going to leave it behind, no matter what the Egyptians tried to do when they buried all their possessions. I see I have a hand up, so I'm going to call on this listener. Hello there, listener. Who are you?
My name's Ed. How you doing?
Oh, good. Who is this?
Ed, E.D.
Oh, Ed. Hi, Ed. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. I'm going through a bad thing, though, right now. My son just told me I got to move out the house.
Oh, you live with your son?
Yeah, he take care of me. He's supposed to. Now he tell me I got to go. He said I'm causing too much trouble.
Uh-oh, what are you doing? What are you doing to cause trouble, Ed?
I don't know. He said I'm always into something. You know, he said, he bring like a girl over to the house or something. He said, I spend too much time trying to get to know his girlfriend.
Oh.
I want to make sure that everything's all right, you know? I don't want to be bored. He keep me, tell me go upstairs in my room.
Do you have you have a question for me?
Should I tell him I ain't moving?
Well, I don't know if you have the power to make that decision. You have, you're in his house, is that correct?
Yeah, I paid part of it. I did.
Okay.
We split the bills, but I just paid 10% of everything.
Okay. Well, that's something that you can certainly investigate as an option, but it sounds like in this situation he has the upper hand if he's the one that's paying the bulk of it, just like any other landlord. You know, you got to think about it.
He ain't no landlord. He's just my son.
I know, but he is your landlord. If you're living with him and you're paying a portion, you have to think of him not as your son, but as your landlord, because that's the role he's playing.
I raised this kid from since he was little bitty, though.
I understand
that. I raised him, and then he ended up playing pro basketball and everything. Now he's retired, and now he want to treat me like a dog.
Okay, well, that's your viewpoint, but have you talked to him about the way you're feeling, just like you're talking to me?
Nah, he left. He went outside.
No. I mean, have you ever talked to him about that?
No, he just told me today.
Oh.
Yeah,
well,
he told me about an hour ago. He said, listen, so we got a lady that comes over and helps clean the house and cook for us and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I've been being rude to her. And she keep complaining, saying, oh, your dad is mean. And I told her she needs to hush up because that ain't, you know, she can't be getting me in trouble.
Okay, well, I'm going to see if maybe some of the other callers have a solution for you, but that sounds like something nobody else can really solve for you except you and your son working together. I mean, you've got to talk to him because he's the one you're having the issue with, correct?
Now, and the lady cook our food, and sometimes she don't even cook stuff that I really like. I said, listen, I don't want pork chops. I don't really want that. You know, why don't you make some chicken? She said, well, that's not what I'm making tonight. I said, listen, you got to make what we like because my son's pain.
Mm, okay. Well, hold. Stay on the line. I'm going to mute you and see if one of the other callers has something to offer to what you're saying. Okay, hold on.
Bye.
Okay. Any other callers want to chime in and give Ed some input? Let's see. Interestingly enough, Ed and everyone else who's listening, I was going to talk next about if you don't like where you are, make a getaway plan. So, Ed, this may be something that can help you. Now, I was thinking in terms of jobs and relationships, but it can also, in your case, it's sort of like a relationship. It sounds like you're in a situation where there's conflict, but whenever you are with a person who is providing your place to stay and you're an adult, that person is a landlord, whether you want to think of it as not or not. Even though the person may be your child, your parent, whatever, is still a landlord, and there are some advantages of living together, but if it's causing both of you conflict, it's time to start thinking about a solution. And in your case, the solution may be to make your own getaway plan to live in another situation where you can have things exactly the way you want. We're near the end of today's show, so I'm going to have to urge all of you to come back next week and listen again to the next exciting episode we have. Remember to visit my website, coloryourlifehappy.com, and order my book there if you wish to get it before the pre-release price. I'm your host, Flora Brown, of Color Your Life Happy, the radio show designed to help you uncover the joy you deserve. I'm coming to you live from Anaheim, just as I do every Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. I'm going to ask you to have a blessed week, and remember to color your life happy.